Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us here on the Daily Program. Now, looking at the Brexit result and what we've seen so far, have we seen Brexit have any kind of initial effects on Australian trade agreements?
I think it's far too early to see effects on trade coming through. The only effect was really the devaluation of the pound straight off. That was the immediate effect, which would mean imports would become dearer, so that would be worse for Australia. But where the currency ends up will be part of a longer story.
Mm.
In terms of the actual patterns of trade, at this stage I wouldn't expect much because trade, there's a lead time to it. And supply chains are in place, people are used to dealing with each other, and unless there's an exceptional opportunity, they're not going to change those. And this comes to the heart of the question with the Australian government's proposals. Why should Europe or Britain actually change their trade arrangements? Now, the assumption is that Brexit will mean that the UK leaves the whole European Union and they both sulk. And that'll make openings for Australia, India or anyone else around the place. However, that's still to be negotiated. As in a personal relationship breakdown, if nations break down completely, that's one thing. But if they basically say, OK, you want to be different in these ways, but we still think trading between us is OK, there may be little change.
Well, when we talk about those kind of negotiations that are yet to go on between Britain and the European Union, it is regardless of what they decide to do, it's going to be quite a kettle of fish. There is a lot of wires to be untangled in a great deal of these agreements. Should Australia have to wait until Britain has finalised their post-Brexit trade agreements with the EU before we step in and make any new decisions?
I think you can signal your interest, certainly, and things like this, but I think it's quite unrealistic to expect something like a trade agreement in 12 months. I just don't see that's sensible. Now, one of the things that Australia did when Britain joined back in the 1970s, European Union, is it really mucked up its trade negotiations. Basically, negotiators went in half and said, you can't leave us alone. And New Zealand, on the other hand, looked at some realistic possibilities and got a much better deal from Britain as part of its entry arrangement. So now we're going the other way, and the possibility is that if Australia takes too strong a position, both sides will say, look, Australia's just too hard to deal with. Australia should be saying, we're happy to get involved, but we understand you've got things to sort out.
Mm. I mean, after all, Australia and the UK, they can't actually have any formal discussions until these sort of things are finalised with the European Union, and this is a 2.5-year process we're looking at right now. But we have come to this trade working group establishment. Now, this is quite intriguing when it comes to then dealing with the EU, because we do have this kind of scorned lovers situation between the two. The relationship is rather frosty at the moment when it comes to the negotiating table. So might this trade working group agreement with the UK, might this sort of turn off some of the countries that are still involved in the European Union?
That's certainly a possibility. It's got to remember that when Britain was inside the EU more fully, and now it's leaving, but it was inside and it was fairly keen to have a relationship with Australia, and a couple of other countries would be too. But there are other countries who sort of say, well, really, why do we need Australia? Because the goal of the European Union is basically to set up a trade agreement between the adjacent countries and do as much trade as they can between each other.
Mm-hmm.
So why pick up someone from the other side of the world who really can't offer that much?
So looking at this kind of pragmatically, what would be more valuable to us in terms of relationships? Would we be going with the UK, who it would be fair to say might be in something of an industrial decline in a lot of ways, and looking at more isolationist policies? Would it be more pragmatic to strengthen our relationship with them or strengthen it with some of the other European countries?
I think this is part of the problem with bilateral trade negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a them or us, or them or them or us sort of thing. If we approach it in the traditional approach was multilateral, so you'd treat everyone as the most favoured nation. In other words, you would give the best conditions to one country, you'd agree to give that to all the others. Now, the current preferential trade agreements are quite different, and they're basically saying, how can we make some adjustments so that you can advantage some of our trade and we'll advantage some of your trade? And it's a very different mindset. So it is, I think your phrase was, you know, the frosty relationship. I think it's quite true. Basically, we've had a breakup just a few months ago, and already we're trying to be the new suitor to both. Now, you'd be a pretty brave bloke to walk into a social party and try that one, let alone, you know, try and negotiate trade over several years with that. So I think, you know, it's good to want to take opportunities, but we've got to be a bit circumspect about how realistic some of this stuff is. Mm. But the other thing you've got to remember in this is that these free trade agreements, in some areas, just have not benefited Australian agriculture, for example. Food and agriculture, and the number of countries I've looked at, we're actually worse off in our net trade position than beforehand, because they took better advantage of the opportunities than we did.
Well, I guess just as a final point, on the other side of the coin from this debate that we are hearing, the UK Independence Party representative James Carver said Australia should be rewarded or first in line for its stance, for its personable stance when dealing with Britain, and he's urged ministers to ignore criticism from some members in Brussels. This approach to trade, this approach that we are taking with Britain, might it be seen as a positive thing that some other nations might take heed of and might follow suit?
The question really is when you've got a number of political representatives from different parties expressing an opinion, where do you put your money?
Yeah.
And I think the Independence Party clearly would see that, you know, the sort of the worry is that Britain will lose. And so they would be, and the Independence Party, which has got some of its own internal problems, would be basically saying, look, if we take back Australia, you know, they've been great to us in the past, there's that sort of underlying belief that this could make it better.
Mm.
And so, yes, I think there is a possibility of those sort of things, but the Independence Party at this stage doesn't have that much political power. And so they may wish and suggest that, but it's not something that's going to be simply solved. It's going to be what I'd call careful and sensitive negotiations are needed. And I think telegraphing it through the front pages of newspapers and on the internet as, you know, we're going to have an agreement in 12 months and all this sort of thing, I think it's just forcing something which will ultimately be counterproductive if we're not important. Mm. I think we need to be a bit smarter. We need to target a few things where we really want to make some gains, where we've got natural complementarity. And the idea of just going in for a full agreement, it's a bit early.
Well, Mark, do appreciate you joining us, having a chat with us about this one, because, for Britain and the European Union, it is quite a tangled web, and I don't think it's one that we want to be caught up in too quickly or without thinking about what we're going to be doing first. Do appreciate your time.
Okay, thanks very much for having us.